So for Parshas Vayera, I thought that we would discuss the mitzvah of basar b'chalav, meat and milk. The mitzvah, the negative commandment, not to eat milk and meat that have been cooked together. That's the biblical prohibition. And rabbinically, we won't eat milk and meat even when they're not cooked together. And while we won't really focus on the halacha, as usual, we may touch on a few halachic points. Now, why is this relevant to Parshas Vayera? So, reference was made already, I think, last week, that at the beginning of the Parsha, when Avram is approached by the malachim, by the angels, so he has guests, and he has to serve his guests. So the pasuk describes how he served them. And it says, Vaikach chem'a v'chalav, and he took butter and milk, uven ha'bakar asher asa, and the calf that he had prepared, vayitein lifnehem, and he gave it to them. V'hu omeid aleihem, and he stood over them, tachas ha'eitz, under the tree, vayochelu, and they ate. So he served them butter and milk, and he served them meat. So it seems he's serving them basar b'chalav in some way. So now we've mentioned a couple of times already that Avram kept the whole Torah. So how could he do this? Now, simply reading the psukim, you know, he didn't necessarily cook it together, they didn't necessarily eat it together. But even the Gemara seems to describe, he kept even the derabanan. It says he kept even Erev Tavshilin, which is a derabanan. Erev Tavshilin is what we do when Yontif goes right into Shabbos. In order to prepare, to be allowed to prepare to cook on Yontif for Shabbos, there's a mitzvah called Erev Tavshilin. We're not going to go into the details, but that's a rabbinic mitzvah. So it seems from the Gemara that Avram kept even the rabbinic mitzvahs. So therefore, some Mefarshim wonder that even if they didn't eat basar b'chalav, but you're not even allowed to put milk and meat on the same table. There's a rabbinic prohibition against putting milk and meat on the same table, so how could he even bring it to them together? That seems, you know, clear from the pasuk that he brought it for them together. So the Lev Aryeh in Chulin asks this question, and he answers that the pasuk goes on to say, "V'hu omeid aleihem," and he stood over them as a shomer, as a watchman. And then he says, as long as you have a watchman, you have somebody guarding to make sure that they don't eat it together, you are allowed to put milk and meat on the same table, as long as there's someone designated who's not going to be eating, to just observe and make sure nobody, you know, partakes of both. Rabbi Akiva Eger argues that Rabbi Akiva Eger holds that that's not a heter, that there's no exemption, there's no, you know, you're, even if somebody's watching, that doesn't allow you to put milk and meat on the same table, and that would not be a heter, that would not allow you to do it. Now, the Das Zakenim, the Bali Atosvos on this pasuk, comment that beautiful comment, which is that if you go back to that Gemara that says that Avram kept the entire Torah, it says he even kept a Ruvei Tavshilin. Now, the commentaries in the first place are bothered by this, the fact that that's a rabbinic mitzvah. In fact, I believe that in the Gemara, it may only say Ayin Tav for Erev Tavshilin, or it may now say Erev Tavshilin in our version, but there's a comment of the Gra that it's a mistake to read that as Erev Tavshilin. It just said Ayin Tav, and it didn't stand for Erev Tavshilin, which is rabbinic. It stood for Erev Tchum, which is a different halacha, which is a biblical mitzvah, according to one opinion. But that's how the Gra says. But it's a little problematic in the eyes of some of the commentaries to learn that Erev Tavshilin is rabbinic, to say that Avraham kept even the rabbinic laws. Others, you know, accept that, and, you know, I think it works well for me to accept that he kept even the rabbinic laws. But the Das Zakenim says that Erev Tavshilin here does not refer to, you know, what we call Erev Tavshilin when we you know, prepare for Yontif, that which allows us to cook on Yontif to prepare for Shabbos. That's not what Erev Tavshilin means in this Gemara. Erev Tavshilin literally means mixing cooked foods. That's what it means. Eruv, mixing, tafshilin, cooked food. The Dasa Kainim says that what it means is Avram kept the entire Torah. Even, he didn't even mix cooked food, meaning he didn't mix milk and meat. Even though you might look at this pasuk and, you know, it might appear to you that he was, you know, offering milk and meat. But says the Das Kainim, no, he even kept Eruv tafshilin, he didn't even mix. He kept the entire Torah, he wouldn't even mix milk and meat. How so? So what did he do? So if you read the pasuk, it's one after the other. He gave them butter and milk. And then he gave them the meat afterwards. First milk, and then meat. And that's why he didn't break any halachos in that way. Mostly, generally. We'll get to one more point where it might be a problem. But that's what he did. And really, Rashi over here, Rashi implies that that was also what he did. Rashi says, based on a Gemara, that which he prepared first, he brought to them. Meaning, he brought it in this order. So, and Rashi may be trying to hint at that he did it in such a way that it should be permissible.
Did he have special dishes?
Did he have?
Oh, dishes.
I don't know. I don't know if they used dishes. They probably used disposable. So there's one more point, which is that even though you may not have to wait after eating milk before eating meat, but you do still have to wash out your mouth. You have to wash out your mouth and chew on some bread or something like that. And there's no implication that he did that here.
Well, it could be told to quickly bake the
excellent. Beautiful. So he says to prepare bread as well. But we don't find when he brings the food out that he brings out the bread. So what does Rashi say? So Rashi says that he didn't bring the bread because Sarah, his wife, became to have her period. She became tameh, impure, and that made the food impure, and he couldn't serve it them, and that's why he didn't bring the bread. But the Maharam Shif says that you don't have to say that. That's a nice, you know, reason. But really, you could say that the reason why he didn't, it doesn't say that he brought the bread, is because that's obvious. Because if he brought them milk, and then he brought them meat, well, of course he brought them bread in between, because you have to bring bread in between. So that's why the Pasuk didn't have to say it. But certainly, he did bring bread as well. And that's what the Maharam Shif says. So that's really just the introduction. That's how we get on to the topic of Basar B'Chalav. And now I want to go through some of the reasons given in the Rishonim and the Achronim why such an issur exists, why there's a prohibition against eating milk and meat. And we may come back a little bit to the topic of Avraham Avinu at the end. So really, it starts with, you know, where does this prohibition come from? So the pasuk appears three times in the Torah as follows. Lo sivashel gedi b'chalei vimo. Do not cook a kid, goat, in its mother's milk. It doesn't say anywhere, don't eat milk and meat together. Three times in the Torah it says, do not cook a goat, a kid goat, in its mother's milk. And Chazal explained, they developed that it's coming to tell us, says it three times, once to tell us that you can't cook it, as it says explicitly, once to tell us that you can't eat it, and the third time to tell us that you can't benefit from it. Now, why it uses the word lo sivashel, don't cook it, all three times, so that the Rishonim discuss, it's either to tell you that it's only forbidden when you cooked it, other interpretations, but that's where it's learned out from. So that's sort of the starting point. It's also noteworthy in many of the Rishonim that want to try to connect it to the pasuk in Mishpatim, the first time it appears. I believe the second time it appears, it's among other forbidden foods. The first time it appears is in Mishpatim, where it's actually talking about the mitzvah of Bikurim, of Aliyah L'Regel, of going up to Yerushalayim every one of the three major holidays. There's a mitzvah to go up to Yerushalayim. And the pasuk also says, "Their reishis bikurei admatcha, the first of your ripened fruit, tavi beis Hashem elokecha, you should bring to the beis hamikdash the first fruits." And the answer is, "Lo sevash el gedi b'chalevim ol," and don't cook a king in its mother's milk. So part of what the Rishonim try to do as they explain the reason for this mitzvah is try to connect it to either Bikurim or to the general topic of Aliyah L'Regel, of going up to Yerushalayim for the Chag.
Bikurim, first fruit?
First fruit, yeah. Right. Yeah, so we have to work on what's a possible connection. So some of the reasons given are, you know, interrelated. They're going to relate to, you know, mixing things, or on a Kabbalistic, more Kabbalistic level, more spiritual level, mixing things when you're mixing Basa Mechav. So we'll get to those and we'll try to kind of group them together. There's also a group that's learning that it's more connected to sort of like Tzar Balei Chayim, having, you know, being merciful towards the animal. So that's really the approach of the Rashbam. And the Ibn Ezra has a similar approach. The Rashbam says that normally goats have two kids at a time. So he said it was normal that you would shecht one of them. You had two goats, and one of them will get shechted. And so then you have a mother who has had two babies, now only has one, so only has to give milk to one of them. So there's a lot of leftover milk. There's a lot of milk, I mean, or in general, he says goats produce a lot of milk, she-goats. So there's a lot of milk around. So it was normal to take that milk and cook the kid that you're shechting, the kid goat that you're going to be eating, cook it in the mother's milk. And he says that the pasuk was l'fi ahovah, the pasuk was talking to the time, that was a normal activity. And he says that's terrible. To take a child and cook it in its mother's milk is just, you know, merciless. And he relates it. We talked about Shua HaKein sending away the mother bird. That there's a lack of mercy in that act of cooking a child in its mother's milk. And therefore, that's forbidden. And that's extended to all Basar B'chalav, all other milk and meat you can't eat together. Now, he doesn't really explain why it's extended. Just says it, you know, and because it is. It's just a fact. The Ibn Ezra gets into a little bit more. The Ibn Ezra starts to talk about how, you know, he says, you don't know, maybe the milk that you buy in the market, you know, will, you know, came from the mother of this animal. You sort of make it into like, you never know, and therefore you should just avoid it. If I could find it. He says, we don't need to look for a reason. He says, but maybe it's because it's achzariah slave, it's cruelty to do this. Similar to that you can't slaughter a mother and child on the same day. Or he also mentioned Shivu HaKein sending away the mother bird. Well, it depends who you ask. We had an opinion that it wasn't, but the Rambam were certainly of the opinion that it was showing mercy. So he says, so the Ibn Ezra says, you know, most people don't own their own sheep. And they buy their milk from the market, and that milk is gathered from many different animals into, you know, a big vat. And you never know, maybe you buy a goat, you don't know who the mother is, and you might come to cook the goat in its mother's milk, and therefore, he says it's like safek d'oraisa l'chumra, which is a big chiddush to say that. It's very novel to suggest that this is based on the law that when there's a biblical safek uncertainty, we lean to the strict side. That's the general rule. That if we're not sure about a possible biblical prohibition, we just try to be strict. And therefore, since you never know, this might be the child of that, you know, this milk might be from the mother of this goat, so you just have to avoid the whole thing. And that really opens up a can of worms. So, you know, what if you do know? Or what if you add another suffix? Because sometimes if you have two stakes with two uncertainties, even on a biblical commandment, that you're now allowed to be lenient. So I don't think he literally means that that's, you know, it's the general, you know, the official rule of Sotik Ochomer, but it's built in that it's based on this, built into this law is, it's based on uncertainty, but it certainly will apply in all situations. Short intermission to fill this up.
I don't know all of the details dealing with our and things like that, and how being accommodated, but on a basic level, just cutting something is not a problem.
Well, it starts with an animal, but it starts with meat, but then they grow more meat from it. So it's been discussed already. I don't remember, you know, how the poskim ruled. I'm pretty sure they said it wouldn't be, but I don't remember for sure. Right, you could definitely get mixed up, yeah, it's possible.
I have a question during the intermission. You know how they say Abraham and like all the others kept the Torah? Like, how could they keep the Torah? Like, Abraham would know that he was going to sacrifice his son, and he would know Hashem was going to tell him he shouldn't do it.
Well, I don't know if it means that they kept, they saw the Torah that, the way it's written, but it means they kept the laws of the Torah.
But how did they know the laws of the Torah? Hashem said
Hashem, they had right through divine providence. Prophecy, or we talked about how they could discern it by looking at creation, you know, understanding how the world worked. They were in touch more spiritually, how their actions affected things. They were able to discern it on their own.
I might have said that the case where you are intending to pick up something disconnected and you end up cutting something connected.
Okay.
Might have said that I intended to
so
the very next group that I thought that
the next group I would say
I just thought that it was disconnected and ended up
are, as I mentioned before, those who say that you're mixing forces. Actually, before I go with that, let's just do the Rambam. The Rambam has a very straightforward reason. Just finishing off the Rashbam's reason. So the Rashbam says, how does this connect to the Regel, so the holiday? So he just says, because during the holiday, you're eating a lot of meat, so that's when we bring this up. You know, in connection to the holiday, you're going up to Jerusalem, you're going to be bringing carbono sacrifice, you're going to be eating meat, and that's why it's brought up there, the prohibition of eating that meat with milk. The Rambam writes in Moreh Nevochim that he thinks that this is somehow related to Avodah Zarah, that this was the way, he says, because milk and meat is a thick food, And he says it's the type of food that could be used for idolatry, for avodah zarah, that they would, he says, maybe they would eat this at their feast, at their avodah zarah feast, at their, you know, the celebrations, their holidays. And he says it, one thing that brings this point out for me is the fact that the Torah mentions it in connection to our holidays, as if it's saying that even though the non-Jews, they, in celebrating their gods and celebrating their holidays, they'll eat milk and meat, but for you, for your holidays, no milk and meat. We're not going to do that. And the Kli Yakar actually has a very interesting remez, hint to this idea, the Rambam suggestion. The Kli Yakar points out that back in Parshas Bereishis, when Cain and Hevel bring their karbanos, so the pasuk describes, the pasuk says,
The Hevel v'hevi gam hu mibechoros tono u'meichal v'hen.
And Hevel brought from his bechoros tono, the firstborns of his sheep, u'meichal v'hen, which would probably be translated. Let's see how Art Scroll does it. Archko says, and from their choices. Mechal vehen, from their choices. I would have thought to translate it as, and from their fats, like chelev. And that's really how the Targum Onkelos translates it, mishaminon, like shamin, which means fat. That he brought from the animal, from the choicest of his flock, the first ones of his flock, and the chelev and the fat. But the Kli Yakar says that it could be understood to mean, and from their milk, that they brought, because chalav, chelev, it's all the same root, means milk also, that he brought from the choicest of his flock, the firstlings of his flock, and their milk, meaning he brought as a carbon milk and meat, because as the Rambam's describing, that's how you served, in this case he was serving Hashem, but that's how in the early times they served gods, was with either eating this or giving it as a sacrifice, but that's what was used. And so that would be a hint or a proof to what the Rambam is suggesting, that this was used for the service of God in early times. Now, the Sefer HaChinuch is the first, or is one of the first to talk about the simple issue of just mixing two forces. That when we mix basar b'chalav, when we mix milk and meat, we're mixing together two forces that should not be mixed together. He compares it to Mashika Savnu b'mitzvos mechashefa. It's related to what I described by the mitzvah of magic, that one is not allowed to perform magic, black magic. So what is magic? What, you know, we don't have it nowadays. We don't really understand what it is. But the Sefer HaChinuch actually has an extensive discussion about magic and, you know, what it is and why it's not a good thing.
You're not doing the show yet. You realize the Shabbos. And you're not going to show your malacha.
So, by
the
mitzvah of kishuf of magic, the Sefer HaChinuch
writes
that Hashem, at the time of creation, he gave every object in the world a nature to perform a certain type of action.
No,
it's nature. He put into every object a certain nature. Every living, every non-living, everything has its particular, you know, use and way about it. And that was for the good of the world. Each one had its purpose and its use. And each one was commanded to do as it should. Now, he says, besides for that which each one does on its own, when you mix any one thing with another, it brings about a different reaction, right? It's kind of like chemistry. So this is, you know, written in the, I don't know, the 1200s, late 1200s, I would say, probably. But, you know, he's basically talking chemistry, maybe on a more spiritual level, but he's saying everything has its own nature and its purpose. But when you mix two things together, then they bring out something else. They bring out another action.
So then I'm Gaia on each one. The Korban for each one.
Right on. He's going to get there. Excellent. So, when you do this, it kind of brings in forces that we weren't really meant to be using. We weren't meant to tap into these forces in the world. Shem didn't put them as a natural part of creation. Hashem knew that what comes from these, you know, mingling of forces is ra, is evil, is bad for the world.
As of yet, we don't have the proof.
He says, right, and they can even do things, and he says, what can happen is that when you mix these two forces, they'll create a new force in such a way that they completely nullify the original two items, that there's nothing that remains of the original two. And this is where he brings in kilayim, he brings in interbreeding, let's say, where there's a prohibition in the Torah to interbreed two animals, kilayim, so, or two plants. So you can't take, a horse and a donkey and make a mule. You're not allowed to do that. And what he's saying is that because you're destroying the horse and the donkey, you're taking those out of the world. Yes. Yes, but you're not allowed to make one. Here he's describing that the process. You're right. So I don't think it's always that the creation is necessarily bad. Sometimes that he mentions that sometimes, but other times it's just the process, because through the process you've taken away what existed before and nullified that. And that, you know, Hashem created the world with horses and donkeys, and now you've taken a horse and a donkey, and there's no longer, you know, the offspring isn't a horse or a donkey. There's no horse or donkey. There's just a mule. And that's sort of taking away from the intent of Hashem's creation. Hashem created the intent that there should be horses and donkeys, and you're making, you know, a mule. So perhaps, yeah. So the Torah tells us. Where it's okay to wander and where it's not. The Torah is telling us this is not okay. If it doesn't say that it's not okay, then it's okay.
Okay.
So, So that's the basic idea of kishuv, of magic, and also of kilayim, of interbreeding. And he says that's also perhaps what's going on with basar b'chalav. That it's the same point, that somehow you're joining two forces to make something new that's not desired in the world. He says, I'll prove it to you. He really says, I'll bring you a small proof to this. And that is that it's forbidden even to cook them. Even if you're not going to eat them. Even just to cook them is forbidden, even if you're not going to eat them. And why? Why would it be forbidden just to cook them? So he says, it's like I'm suggesting that just the bringing these forces together is what's the problem here. Eating them, you know, adds to it. You're bringing, but even just to cook them together, he says, even if you're making it without the intent to eat it, or you eat it without any enjoyment, as opposed to other forbidding foods, it's only forbidding if you actually, you know, enjoyed it. But if it got like stuffed down your throat, it wouldn't be forbidden. But when it comes to Basar B'chalav, it would be. So even just joining these two forces together is what is forbidden. Now, the Rambam, elsewhere, not in Mor Nevochim, but in the Halachos, seems to imply, and the Kesef Mishnah says this, that the Rambam holds that the reason why you can't cook it is because if you cook it, you might come to eat it. And really, the main focus is that you shouldn't eat it. And there's a major practical difference between the Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch, and it's relevant even nowadays. For example, if somebody worked in a lab and they were doing research, and their research involved cooking milk and meat together, so with no intent to eat it, is that okay or not? So according to the Rambam, it would be okay, because the whole point, the reason why you can't cook it is because you might come to eat it. But if there's no chance, whatever, you know, make up the case, but if the circumstances are that you'll never come to eat this, so then it would be permitted according to the Rambam. But according to Sefer HaChinuch, that just mixing these two forces is the problem. Forget about eating, it's really the cooking that's the problem. We don't bring these two forces together, so then even working in a lab and putting them together would be forbidden. You mean a dairy pot? Yeah, so that's an issue of the pores absorbing milk. The pores in the pot absorbing milk, and now when you cook meat in it, some of the taste of the milk comes out from the pores.
What happens if you porcelain or glass or some of the things that don't absorb?
Yeah, so it might be okay then.
It'd be okay?
If you know that it doesn't absorb. In general, we say that glass doesn't absorb. I think the custom is that in people's houses, they still keep separate glass. But on a more commercial level, you might find that they're a little more lenient about using the same glasses, you know, that's being a dairy dishwasher and a meat dishwasher, you know, using them at the same meal because glass doesn't absorb.
Well, so now we've got to read the rest of the braids that way.
So others also go with this same idea of the Sefer HaChinuch, that there's a problem if you're mixing forces together. The Tror Hamar, who's also a Rishon, an early commentary, he describes it as that one of these represents din, judgment, justice, and the other one represents rachamin, mercy. He says, meat is din, is judgment. As the pasuk says, kate kol basar balefanai, that all flesh comes before God, like in judgment. So that's meat. And chalav is, milk is mercy. Because it's white, and you know, it's like a clean slate. Kashelag Yalbinu, right? Hashem says, I'm going to wipe away, I will, you know, whiten your slate, like snow. That white represents mercy and a clean slate. So
That's not offered by a voter.
So he says that these have to be, he doesn't explain why, but these have to be kept separately. We don't take midas rachamim and midas din, mercy and justice, and mix them together. The Kuyakar also has an approach like this, that the problem is just mixing these two substances. But he says the reason is because they were separated by nature, and now you're bringing them back together. What does he mean by that? He says that meat of a fetus, a baby, whatever, a person's meat comes from the mother's blood. That's where the meat, that's where flesh comes from. It comes from the blood of the mother. And the same is true of milk. A mother's milk comes from her blood. That's been proven scientifically. That the mother's milk comes from her blood. And he says they separated. Blood, some blood went to become flesh, and some blood went to become milk. Once they're separated, it's not proper, if they were meant to be separate, to now rejoin them back together. If nature took them apart, if Hashem designed the world in such a way that they're pulled apart, it's not right to bring them back together. Kind of similar to the, in a way, to what the Sefer HaChinuch is describing, that that two things that were created separately were not meant to be recombined. The Kuyakar adds that he wants to relate the mitzvah to the mitzvah Bikurim, where you take the first fruits and these are the first fruits, they sort of separate themselves, and they don't join the rest of the fruits. You take them to Yerushalayim, you give them to a Kohen there, and you don't combine them back with the first fruits. He says that with the rest of the fruits, that's the relationship between Basar B'Chalav and the Bikurim and the first fruits. That they are meant to be separate, and we don't join them back together. So, just to sort of bring it full circle back to Avraham Avinu, the Rabbeinu B'Chayai has a couple of approaches to the Basar B'Chalav. The first really is just very straightforward, that Basar B'Chalav is metamtein the lev, it's impure for the heart, that's why it's forbidden like other forbidden foods. Doesn't, you know, why, it's not really for us to ask, it's within the system of creation, that it's not good for the spiritual quality of the person. And he says because milk comes from blood, and blood is like fury and cruelty, you know, the redness and the blood. And even though, right, you know, maybe all milk should be forbidden then, because all milk comes from blood. But he says that it's true, so really milk on its own, since it's changed, it's no longer blood, then it would be acceptable. It wouldn't have that bring about that cruelty in the person. However, when you now join it with meat, which is, you know, like flesh, so when you put the milk back to the meat, you rejoin the blood with the flesh, so that brings back that power to bring about cruelty, and that's why one has to abstain. And that's why he says it's mentioned by the holidays, by the mitzvah going up for the regel, to remind us that we're going up to a place of nevuah, a place of prophecy. We have to make sure that our hearts are pure when we come up to Yerushalayim. That's his main, you know, reason. He then quotes the Rambam's reasoning of Avodah Zarah, and then he says, but really, these aren't really the real reasons. They're just, you know, to sort of answer the question, what's the reason? But really, we don't know the reason. It's a chok. It's halacha that we don't know the reason for. And in fact, Chazal says that At the end of days, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to reveal to us why the Torah forbade Basar B'Challah. Now, he then goes on and wants to give another reason, Al Derech HaKabbalah, more Kabbalistic reason, which I did not understand a word that he said, but... Within his description, he describes how, whatever this reason is, it's only a problem for us because we have a Yetzer Hara. This Kabbalistic reason only applies to us because we have a Yetzer Hara. But at the end of days, when we won't have a Yetzer Hara anymore, we'll no longer be forbidden from eating Basar B'Challah. And he says, and the Malachim of Avram, the angels that came to visit Avram, since they don't have a Yetzer Hara, that's why it was permitted for Avram to serve them Basar B'Challah. Because they don't have a Yetzer Hara. And for whatever this Kabbalistic reason, which I didn't understand, I couldn't explain to you, it doesn't apply if you don't have a Yetzer Hara. That's why it was okay to serve them Basar B'Challah, because they don't have a Yetzer Hara. So some learned that he knew, some learned that he didn't know. So he would be learning, I guess, that he knew. So he's learning that he didn't. Now, the Noam Elimelech, Hasidic Rabbi, Rabbi Elimelech of Lezhinsk, in his parish on Parsh Mishpatim, has a very similar comment. And he's coming to explain there's a tendency, he says, to be slightly more lenient when it comes to the laws of milk and meat on Shavuot. Certainly not to transgress any biblical commandments, but maybe to be a little bit more lenient about the rabbinic commandments. And he says that the reason is because on Shavuot we're like malachim. We got the Torah. We're like angels on Shavuot. And just like we see that Basar B'Challah is angel food, Avram serves the angels, Basar B'Challah, then that gives us room to be lenient on Shavuot, when we're like angels, to be a little bit more lenient when it comes to Basar B'Challah. Now, if you look in the poskim, there's a lot of discussion about this. There are definitely poskim who rule that there is room to be more lenient on Shavuot, right? We have a custom to eat dairy on Shavuot, and there is room to be lenient. Others say no way. Rav Menashe Klein in Tshuva has a very beautiful comment where he says, you know, Adarab, on the contrary, on Shavuot we should be particularly machmir. Why? So he quotes a Medrash. The Medrash says that at the time of the giving of the Torah, the Malachim came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they said, why are you giving the Torah to man? Leave it up here in Shemayim, don't give it to man. And the Medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe the face of Avram Avinu. And he said to the Malachim, didn't you go to this guy's house and eat Basar B'Challah at his house? You ate milk and meat at his house. And you want the Torah to be left to you? Every baby who goes home from every little child knows you can't eat Basar B'Challah. And you guys ate Basar B'Challah. And so I'm going to give the Torah to man, and I'm not going to leave it here for the angels. And that's how we were victorious in conquering the Malachim, in getting the Torah. So he says, so certainly on Shavuot, on the contrary, we should be extra careful about Basar B'Challah. That's what earned us the right to receive the Torah. And the Beis Halevi also says a very similar idea. Beis Halevi says that's why we eat dairy on Shavuot. Why is there a custom to eat dairy? Beis Halevi says because we want to specifically show how careful we can be about the laws of Basar B'Challah. Because that was the way that we defeated the Malachim. We conquered and were able to receive the Torah. So on Shavuot, when we receive the Torah, we want to show that we're very strong in these halachos. And so we deliberately eat milchig, we eat dairy, because otherwise we couldn't show that. If we just ate meat, so there's no way to show that we're careful about milk versus meat. But because we eat milk, so we're very careful to have the right amount of waiting time and to make sure you bench in between and all the relevant halachos. Only because we eat dairy, we can show that we are very careful about these halachos and that we were the ones who deserved to receive the Torah as a merit for our very careful, it's probably one of the mitzvahs that we're the most careful about in the entire Torah, and that's what earned us the right to receive the Torah.